Yes. Alator?
Here.
Caldillo?
Here.
Hooker?
Here.
Juarez?
Here.
Strong? Zaker?
Here.
And Commissioner Langell has an excused absence.
Okay. So, anybody from the public? No public comments. All right, so let's go ahead and jump into schools.
Okay, if just introductory remarks, we have two representatives here to provide some information materials related to the questionnaires that went out earlier. We have Carolyn Scholl from the Chula Vista Elementary School District and Janaea Cork from the Sweetwater Union High School District. Go ahead, Carolyn, if you would.
Okay. Well, you have the questionnaire. Any questions or comments? Having
I proved it. I really had questions for Sweetwater. One question I had for Chula was, why the decline in students? Any idea? Is it just a...
Yes, as it happened. A few months back, I found a old spreadsheet from 2003. And it had enrollment and capacity at that time. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 schools that have been built since then. Virtually all of the schools that were in existence in 2003, the vast majority of them, with the exception of maybe, it looks like, 3, enrollment went down by significant amounts. So I added up the total number of decline over that period of time is 3,719. The total increase, as we know, we've been bursting at the seams in the southeastern portion, where those were the new schools since 2003 are located. Those schools gained 4,976 students. So I think what's interesting is that that's only a net increase with all of the development that's happened over the last 10 years in Southeast Chula Vista, an increase of 1,297 students net.
Right, that was really surprising with the number of growth.
Yeah. So what we think is that people migrated from the western portion and the I-805 corridor, the South San Diego portion of our district, to the new homes on the east. So we're really looking at only 1,000 new students coming from outside of the district, not kind of shifting. So that's kind of been where we've been doing a lot of our research this year, is looking at that. Earlier in the year, we looked at, I've been geocoding student files, collecting student data, residential data, for the last 10 years, since 2009. So we took a look back at those snapshots in time and for each attendance boundary, and they've all just been declining. They've been declining, and just over time there's it's been sort of camouflaged because we've had this increase on the east side, and we've been building schools, and we've been scrambling to house the students from the new development areas there. But overall, we were seeing no growth for a time, but we were holding steady. And this is the first year that we've really seen a significant decline in enrollment. That's troubling.
Is that students in all categories, or is it in all age ranges, or are you seeing...
For these purposes, I'm looking at K-6.
K-6.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that would be total enrollment, special ed. The numbers that I reported to you this year include preschool numbers, which I don't think we've included in the past, and we're still declining.
That's interesting. I mean, I have heard through the news everything, you know, millennials are waiting longer to have children and stuff like that. I just never had seen that stuff, and when I started reading the report, I was like, wow, that's a...
You know, I vaguely remember kind of sort of a similar conversation with regards to the western part of the city, and the explanation was given, well, you know, we have kind of aging population on this side, and we kind of sort of our kids have, you know, we don't really put kids in school that much, versus if you look at the average population on the east side, these are startup families, first-time home buyers, and, you know, multiple kids, so it's interesting to see that we're actually seeing a decline.
But on the flip side of that, though, I remember last year that they were talking about the pricing of housing causing homes to have multiple families, multiple generations. So while you may have an older generation owning the home, you might have a second generation or more occupying it. With children, and that they were forecasting, I think at that point, that the schools were going to be busy or fuller because the multiple family housing units, you know, or
that,
being housing
units. That
is unit.
The case, that's still the case on the southeast, in the
southeast
portion.
Yeah.
If you look at the model, the style of townhomes, the three-story townhomes, what we're seeing is a lot of times multiple families in those townhomes.
In each level?
Yes, because the middle level is, you know, your living space, your living room, kitchen, that dining room, but there's a, you know, a master suite, you know, on the top, you know, whatever, and there's bedrooms and bathrooms on the bottom, so you have a family here and a family here, and they just share
common areas.
Mm-hmm.
And then
yeah.
And then also too, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, what's that new I don't know if it's an ordinance or it's a state law, the granny flat law too.
ADU, yeah.
Is that, has that been calculated into all these forecasts as well? I mean, I don't know if that's gonna
that's
have an
the,
impact.
I thought that was San Diego, City of San Diego, not Chula Vista.
I thought it was a state. I thought it's state.
No, we actually, yeah, this actually has already gone through the planning commission. No, we now have a new ordinance that really allows
for that. Right.
For accessory dwelling units, and the whole idea behind it was to deal with some affordability. So if you, you know, you can convert your garage, you can add, you know, and much of that we thought was going to happen really in the western part of Chula Vista, older
right.
home.
Exactly.
And you're right. The idea was that, well, you know, parents have lived in the home for 30 years, they love it, they don't want to move somewhere else, but then now they have their children that really need a place to start a family. So these type of ADUs would allow, so you would have more people living inside a home than typically we had seen in the past. But I think that hasn't caught up with us yet. Those type of kind of phenomena usually take 3 to 5 years before the numbers show up in your reports.
We haven't calculated that in to our projections. But I do know that a lot of the, like, you know, I mean, I have a 19-year-old myself. They can't afford to move out. They can't, you know. I mean, I thought about putting a tiny house on my property, you know. But, you know, it's just like dropping it there and sticking them out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, how are they going, where are they going to go, you know? Mm-hmm. Like,
That's true.
But, the other kind of thing I wanted to bring up about the questionnaire is, and I discussed it a little bit with Scott, each year I sort of hesitate even putting numbers in that five-year projection, because it's really not very meaningful, especially for us in the elementary district. You know, by the fifth year, you know, we're talking about kids who haven't been born yet, trying to project, you know. And when we do a cohort projection, we simply roll up, you know, the kinders into the first grade and second grade. And so by the fifth year, you're projecting all of your grade levels at what your current kinder levels are, which isn't really very meaningful. So I would just, it's sort of a caveat to take those five-year projection numbers with a grain of salt, with a whole handful of salt, really, actually.
Okay. So. Any other questions for Julissa?
I had a question. So I believe it was last year or the year before, somebody came in and showed us this really nice digital creation of one of the schools that were being built.
That was me.
That was you, right? Is that the one that's going up at
Rotorua?
It's not the new one that's under construction, right? That one's already built?
Yeah, that was built.
That was built, okay.
Yeah, it's been occupied. This is the second year of operation.
And do you have something like that for the school that's
for Village 3? I don't. Thanks for bringing that up. I wanted to address that the new school in Village 3. We are, and just to let you know where we are in the process, we're in the process of acquiring the school site. We are in our due diligence period. We're working with HomeFed to try to get the no further action determination from DTSC. As you might know, there's methane out there, so that complicated that process, and then to complicate it further, one of the test locations came up with higher than acceptable levels of arsenic.
Great. Yeah. Oh, there you're going to say lead.
So we've now done what they call five-foot distance step-out sampling. Those samples also came back with higher than acceptable levels of arsenic.
What is the source of the arsenic? Is that
we
something?
We don't know yet.
Is that something that naturally occurs?
It's naturally occurring. Mm-hmm. And it could be, it's on in the surface levels. It's not, you know, at 25 feet or 30 feet. It's on the surface. So we're thinking that it might be something that was brought in, or, you know, from the spoils, or some, you know, but that will have to be addressed. We're waiting for results on the 10-foot step out sampling.
How would that be addressed?
Well, we would have to have a acceptable work plan to DTSC to mitigate that, to remove it, to, you know, and then to ensure that if we did remove it, that it would all be removed, that, to, you know, we'd have to have a plan in place. We are also, DTSC is going to require us to mitigate the construction of the building in the same manner that the residential homes surrounding the school have been mitigated, so some sort of venting membrane and the stove pipe.
So was this arsenic in the where the houses are built too? Did they not know about it, or
I don't know. Since we don't really even know yet where it came from.
Interesting.
Yeah, that was unexpected.
I was interested.
So how does that delay in terms of timing of the build-up?
In the new development?
We are in the process of putting together our preliminary and endangerment assessment. That's going to be part of it. We've been working really closely with DTSC to try to put some things into that report that will, you know, kind of speed up the process. But essentially, we submit it. They get 30 days to review it, come back to us with, you know, we hope is a no further action determination. But if there's further action, then there's another go around. Once we get a no further action determination from DTSC, we have to submit to CDE for CDE site approval, and that takes at least 30 to 60 days. So we have amended our purchase agreement with HomeFed to extend our due diligence period through June 30th, and we are hoping to have resolution by then.
Is there, if this is a naturally occurring issue, is there a chance that it will develop again? Let's say, you know, it's dealt with now,
yeah,
and we're allowed to proceed with the construction and all that. Is it likely to come back?
No. We're actually more concerned with the, even though they didn't find high levels of methane, we're actually more concerned about the methane because of the sanitary land.
And is it only located, or is it only at this area? Is it at other areas?
It was just one sampling location.
Okay.
That the arsenic was.
Is there a plan to sample other locations?
Well, we've sampled of all the we, I can't remember how many locations we had. It was a lot. We have a lot of sampling locations, and out of all of those sampling locations, this one came back positive.
How big of an area is each location?
They usually it's like a regular soil boring depth, so it could be.
Oh, well, ours. Well, the depth. Our depth was like 35 feet.
Oh wow!
And that covers an area
50 feet. Yeah, because of the methane. DTSC, we proposed a 25-30 foot depth, and DTSC came back and wanted 50 foot depths. I'm trying to think. It's sort of like laid out in a grid pattern,
right? And usually make you go like keep going
like
from
5 feet.
Yeah, from site of location where it's found, then they'll make you do like 5 foot, 10
oh, okay.
foot.
Oh,
and
the step outs.
Yeah, the step
yeah.
outs.
The step outs is
yeah.
what I was curious.
But so you would get a big
yeah.
radius.
But the original samples, the borings,
yeah.
are in sort of a grid pattern.
Okay.
I have a
Thank
question.
You.
I mean, maybe I missed something. I'm sorry if I did. So the arsenic was found on routine sampling, or was it because of new development and it was ordered the testing, or could you?
This was sampling done in accordance with our work plan with DTSC, the sampling that they wanted done on the site, so they could. So that all goes into our preliminary endangerment assessment.
So it's part of due diligence then?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, ideally, you put this work plan together, you submit your PEA, they come back with a no further action, everything is good, and we
mm-hmm.
go on to CDE, but the site's a little more problematic.
Landfill.
I know.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
That
could have been
landfill.
Yeah. From it.
Yep.
Well, last year when I was here, I shared some student generation rates with you. Our student generation rates that we found since then are roughly the same. And this is for our CFDs 1 through 18. The weighted student generation rate for single family detached is 0.4015. That was detached. Single family attached is 0.3573, and multifamily units, apartments, is 0.2543. The average weighted SGR of 0.3725. So it's still pretty high in those, you know, the CFD areas.
And you're finding those to prove out then.
These are calculated from actual students, geocoded to their parcel centroid, and then parsed out by dwelling unit type.
Any other questions for Julie Wisdom?
If I may, and I may be jumping around a little bit. I remember last year the conversation was, and now you're confirming that we're actually seeing a decline in enrollment. Our concern was last year, well, in terms of deferred maintenance with schools on the west side, you know, how are funds allocated? Is that per complaint or? Do we have to wait until you have a leaky roof, or is it what's the methodology? And then
Well, we just in November We walked past our bond measure VV, mm-hmm. and a lot of those funds are going to sort of the deferred maintenance type projects, you know, HVAC replacements and roof replacements.
Right.
And
but I mean, are they on some sort of a kind of a rotational? I don't know what I'm trying to say.
Priority list?
Yeah,
is it based on enrollment? Because if we've seen a decline in enrollment,
right.
is that
yeah.
going to say, well, really, we don't...
We have a deferred maintenance plan.
Okay.
And all of that is incorporated in the deferred
okay,
base.
So it's on some sort of a timeline,
mm-hmm.
the age of the building. And,
right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we're working on incorporating a system in this geographic information system that... We have all of those data on the roofs, on flooring,
okay.
HVAC units in that database. And
you're in the wrong place. I was looking for
the drone port. So that will be in the city council chamber. So if you go back and towards the entrance of the building, hang a right and go all the way down.
Great. Thank you. Sorry so much for interrupting me.
But historically, I would say that. Chulalas Elementary School District has done a pretty good job at keeping their maintenance up on both sides of it.
Okay. So, I know I arrived a little late. So did you go over the schools with the high capacity, Moroka and Reef Canyon, in a little bit of detail as to how the Thai Ranch or Village 3, that school would take on? Or?
Well, that school is right now, it's planned at a 600 student capacity.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure if you were here when I talked about the 5-year projections.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean,
so
I would look
you,
at.
Even at December 19th, you're at 148% in Moroka, and then we'll keep it at 180%.
So we anticipate that opening. Let me back up. We are in the process of adding eight more classrooms to Moroka.
Uh-huh.
So that's another 200 capacity. And then we have a 600 student capacity school planned for Village 3 whenever we get that through. But we are beginning design on that school in the next few months as well.
So I was curious because then I looked at the 2016 report. So Morocco was built at an 800 capacity,
mm-hmm.
yeah. but then you're showing here that you're at 1600 students residing. So how's the capacity that's being planned and then
so
what actually occurs?
Another sort of caveat, again, we discussed it. When I put these numbers together for this questionnaire, I use your forecast,
mm-hmm.
which is reported from the developers, which in my view is sort of wildly optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
It's unlikely, I think, that all of those students will materialize. And it's sort of a best worst case scenario. You know, if things went exactly the way that the developers are anticipating or hoping that they will go, then yes, we'll have too many students. But looking at historically what's happened, we feel that with the construction of the new school, that that will be within capacity.
All right, any other questions? So I guess what other help can the committee help you with?
Get some more development going in southwestern Chula Vista.
Well, actually, it's great you brought that up, if you don't mind. So with your percent capacity that we were just talking about, like some of these schools that are like 50, 60...
Yeah.
percent, you can kind of judge those neighborhoods and try to foresee possible development in these areas so you can draw people to those communities instead of...
Yeah, one of the things I brought last year was a map of the school boundaries color-coded by the percentage of enrollment versus capacity. So the ones that are at capacity or very close to capacity on the west side, that's where all your development's going in right now. So we actually, we're going to be like bursting at the seams up there. And then we have, you know, like the Kellogg's and the Parkviews that are, you know, just kind of struggling. We're also, the district is engaged in a marketing campaign to try to recruit more students outside of the district to try to infill some of
what there is. At what point does enrollment fall so far below where it's like...
Okay. Are you going to close the school?
Yeah.
That's above my pay grade.
Like, I look at Warren, it has a capacity of 287. 44%. I mean, that's a pretty darn small school.
Yeah. We have, this is the first year that I've gotten all of our classroom and facility interior spaces data into the GIS format. So this is the first year I've been able to really get a sort of a definitive classroom inventory. So I have 1,401 classrooms across the district. Thank you. So I have 1,401 classrooms across the district. Out of those, we have 180 that are not assigned to a teacher at grade level.
No.
Not that they're not being used for some other purpose, but not for that purpose. So that's a lot of capacity. And it's all, you know, concentrated, you know, on the west.
To your point, I'm on page 2, which is the table 1, and I'm looking at Southwest. Is that the area you're talking about?
Yes.
Interesting that the CVLC Charter School is on the list, and
so
if you look at the capacity there, it's the highest, 93.41.
CVLCC is
kind of basic question. What is it that they do on that?
Yeah, it's a unique situation in our district. They are a charter,
mm-hmm.
and they do not have an attendance boundary.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
So they are pulling
from
all of the other
yeah.
attendance boundaries.
Probably
right down the street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. There lies the. Part of the answer to your question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and when the district is talking about decline in student enrollment, the concern about it is when they look at the district's enrollment. If you look at our total enrollment, and that would include CVLCC charter. We have 5 dependent charters,
mm-hmm.
Feaster, CVLCC, Discovery, mm-hmm. Arroyo Vista, Feaster.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Is that kind of
Feaster. Those are charter students, they're not district students. So they may be, their capacity, their enrollment might be high,
mm-hmm.
but that doesn't help the district.
Right.
Okay. All right, so I guess let's move on to Sweetwater.
Hello. Man. So you would start with your questions, or you just want me to
go ahead and
go for it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Go for it.
So we fill out the questionnaire. Let me know if you have any questions regarding that. We feel like there were some interesting patterns that we also observed once we completed the questionnaire in terms of where we might really actually be. We too are experiencing a decline in enrollment, even on our sites that are showing in being at or over capacity right now on the east side. We're seeing numbers drop by 100, 150 from last school year to this school year. And then there's obviously the marker from the beginning of the school year to where we end up at the beginning of second semester. And so we've had a decline in our current forecast into next year is that we'll lose another 300 students over this next, like going into this next school year. And so we're taking a look at those sorts of things, and then also really, Carolyn kind of touched on it, but one of the things we're seeing in terms of our capacity is really having a stronger understanding of how our facilities are being utilized and if their utilization is actually reflective of classrooms versus somebody that something else has been moved in there, and then that's not being calculated properly on the capacity reports, which then transfers to the information that's on yours. And so on your report. So we have a small committee that's starting, and I have some project managers that are starting to deep dive and really help pull apart what a master schedule, how that really looks and how it's being used, what it means. And where we have some of our higher capacity on some of our campuses, we're actually seeing there's a threshold for us to actually be helping them shift some things around and take one teacher who's taking an entire classroom, but they're only teaching in their one, maybe two periods of the day. Well, there's a way for us to help you shift because you may have another classroom that's the same way. So those two folks should be sharing the classroom, and then it's creating space. And so we're trying to be really mindful of that. Because we do feel a compression on the east side, we're also aware that, you know, we have middle school 12 still kind of lingering out there, and then there's the beginnings of top discussion about identifying property from high school 14, but we're not there yet. And one of the things we need to be mindful of while we're trying to relieve the pressure with some of our compression on the east side is to make sure we're not doing any overbuild while we long-term forecast for middle school and the high school. So a couple of things that we're doing, like at Olympian, a year and a half ago now, they've been there for a full school year now, we brought in 6 portables for a 3-year lease, and that campus has a new building that's in programming for the beginning phases of design right now. And we're looking, so that it'll offset the portables that we brought in and probably end up, by the time we finish helping them get reorganized with how they're using their space, it'll probably have about a net of about another 2 classrooms, maybe 3, and that should carry them for quite a while. And then Eastlake actually is interesting because they have so many special ed classrooms that are in state that are taking up every one of their nooks and crannies, and so that's an area that we need to focus on to get those students in the proper classrooms that they need to be in. And then they really actually, they've managed to figure out how to use their space really well, but where they are having problems is with their circulation, with parking, getting people off Eastlake Parkway and onto the property and things like that. So that campus is also, most of our, and also in the beginning phases of doing some programming and scope identification for the first step of getting a project overway to relieve some pressure over there and building a new building, get rid of the portables that are taking up parking lot space, et cetera. And so, you know, there's some other challenges happening right now that we're all aware of. And so kind of how those two things come together, I'm optimistic by the time we go through some of those, get through the programming, I'll be able to say I need this tiny X amount of more money so I can get my project through design and through DSA, which would at least really give me about a year. By the time I do full design through DSA approvals, and then I can have projects that are shelf ready. So that's for Eastlake and Olympian. On the east side, there's nothing in terms of, it was one of the questions I think that Scott shared with me, a concern or question regarding Rancho Del Rey. And we're not right now looking at doing any kind of growth improvement with them. Especially with not knowing where we are with middle school 12, but they actually have a slew of portables down there that they're making it work, and they use about 9 portables very specifically for their physical education program. And so it's kind of a unique use of that space, and when we have those conversations with them, they don't like it very much, but there is actually capacity on campus for them if push came to shove, and they're not there yet, and their numbers are you know, starting to slowly drop just a little bit too.
The Rancho Del Rey Middle?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're at 108.
Yeah, and so, you know, the other thing too is when, you know, you're talking to Carolyn and we're watching Chula's numbers, so our numbers are dropping on their own, and then we're forecasting what's happening at Chula, and so we're concerned that there's going to be a double hit for us ultimately when those two things come together. And, you know, there's lots of discussion about how that works, and then the other part of it too in terms of the overcapacity on some of these campuses is there's a committee really trying to wrap their arms around the approval process for like intra-district transfers within our campuses, because obviously there's a huge request to go to the east side. And I think there's been an opportunity to improve that process for how that's being regulated. And so they're deep diving on that and then looking at putting in a new plan systemically moving into this next school year, which should help decrease some of that. So there's a combination of several things that are happening. And I don't feel like we have a true wraparound on what the impact truly is in terms of the decline. I think there's a lot of different factors that are out there, and we're starting to see it, and are concerned about where some of that's going to continue to go.
Okay. So on question seven, I've heard a lot of in the news about Sweetwater Union financial status and you know, the dollar problems they're having. And you say that funding is good so far. Can you elaborate on that? I mean, what's
so
reality?
So I'm going to tread lightly.
Understand.
Okay, because it's super outside of my wheelhouse. But this is what I'm where I am with my staff in terms of what we're doing. We have two funding streams that primarily support the work that we do. It's our Prop O for right now. We also did get a Measure DD, not VV, but DD, passed in November for $400 million. That money will sit kind of on the back burner for a while until things get sorted out. We have an open and active $28 million for Prop O, and we have, so that's for modernization at Bonita Vista Middle, Bonita Vista High School, getting an elevator into the second story at Chula Vista High School with the original building, so getting some ADA compliance in there, and then putting a construction tech band building at Castle Park High School into design. Our intention was to use the DD funds to get the construction underway, but that will, it'll be ready to go. And then in terms of our east side for the CFDs, we got a bunch of projects. All the ones I mentioned are all in that programming phase. And so where I'm headed and hoping that there's support for is that we're gonna finish the programming, and that's gonna solidify for us what our scope is, what our dollars are, what we need to do for forecasting for the project. I'm gonna be requesting the funds that I need to complete that design and get through DSA approval, which would buy me about a year. And then that gives some time and some relieves the pressure of for our CFO and for cabinet and whoever else is involved to figure out the board, how that is, what's coming and going with that entire piece. And then but we'll have projects ready to go. So as soon as money is clear, ready to go, and it's straightened out.
So you got everything you need.
Yeah, I have everything. And that's what I'm focusing on, is trying to get as far as I can with the things that we, and I'm not really sure where that's going at 100%. I think the feedback I'm getting at this point is there's a consistent and equal objective to keep those things moving in the direction that they need to. And we may need to be moving at a little bit of a snail's pace, because there's a lot in motion right now, a lot. And it's going to take some time, and obviously a need to kind of push pause and let things breathe and settle and make sure that there's an effective and understood plan across the board. I mean, that what we're trying to do is almost is secondary to everything else right now.
Okay, all right. Other questions? That's your big one, too.
Yeah.
Okay. Gloria, anybody else? That was a great answer, by the way.
Thank you.
Okay, I think we're good there. Thank you very much
thank
for coming.
Thank
you.
Thank
you.
Really interesting.
Oh, I want to add one comment too about the what's been between being developed more recently on the west side, and also like in Millennia, is the sort of the luxury apartment model.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've noticed that there's more of that coming in on the west side as well. We don't generate a lot of students from that that model.
That's not your population, yeah.
Yeah, they're like.
I think for us, they told us, I'm going to make the top number up, we were going to get 50 out of that development, and we got 3.
Wow.
Yeah, it's significant.
Yeah, we're at about between 10 and 15% regenerating at Pulse, just as a that was.
Do you know where that is?
Post Millennium?
No, just this luxury kind of condo project.
Oh, like Pulse is one. I know they've got some other ones planned.
Yeah, those ones.
Yeah, particularly.
That we did the ride
in Millennia.
Yeah.
And
Millennium.
Are you seeing that
on H?
The same as the apartments developments that are occurring here on the west side?
So it's a little early to tell. So on the west side, but I've noticed that same. It's sort of that same product type.
Is it because they just don't have as many kids?
Well, they're very expensive.
Yeah. Okay.
They're sort of, I think, marketed to the single millennials,
I think that's it, because statistically, people that live in apartments actually have more kids. And I think one of our presentations last
prior years.
You know,
no.
It's true, and it's not. So,
it might just be the way those are being marketed, because I know Pulse, there's a lot of foreign students that live in that complex.
So if you look at the Landings, for instance,
mm-hmm.
The Landings is affordable housing,
mm-hmm.
and
we're three bedrooms too.
Yeah, and we are looking at a student generation rate out of Millennia right now at a little over 50%, which is super high. But most of the time, apartments, market rate apartments, generate around 23% to 25%.
Mm-hmm.
So
big
on the lower end of those product types.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Thank
good
you.
Night.
Good night.
Okay. Good job.
Okay, staff comments?
I guess any issues with the potential issues, item number four.
Recommendations. So I guess, one of the things, it does seem like it is a balancing act between, overbuilding and, you look at the numbers based on the projections, in a lot of cases it exceeds capacity. But by the same token, at the same time, they're experiencing a projected reduction in student population and enrollment. So I think I don't think it necessarily warrants a statement of concern, if that's appropriate in this case. But regarding potentials and issues and recommendations.
I think they're all in compliant. I guess my only concern would be the decline of students, and
right.
How the growth is going to help support that. Because I was with you when I saw the 44%. Where's the threshold of where they close the school? Because there's a balancing act there.
Mm-hmm.
Where is it leveling out? And that would be my only real concern, but I think it's probably too early for that.
And then looking at the enrollment history, aside from last year, where there was a drop in, 3%, but in all the prior years, that percentage drop is very, very minimal. So I don't know if it's, you start monitoring from here forward, and if that trend continues, then you need to start taking a harder look. I don't know.
Yeah, I think there's not much for concern for right now, but I think we need to keep an eye on it.
A plan in place, so far. I mean,
I think they're trying to. They're building. It's a matter of is the right type of buildings. Like you said, they're very expensive. Are a family going to be able to purchase? And go from there.
Yeah.
But I think if we see another sharp drop next year, then I think it's a bigger concern.
And the other thing is the charter schools and the private schools, because if you look at their
they seem to be springing up more and more.
Mm-hmm. Capacity rate, they're running it full, and which begs the question: is it the quality of education? I mean, there are other factors beyond what we're tracking here that's really
mm-hmm.
causing families to either have fewer kids or put their kids in other type of educational facilities, and I mean, I don't know how we can track all that stuff, or whether or not that discussion belongs here, but I think it goes a little deeper than these, because declining student enrollment, to me, is just kind of a bizarre phenomenon.
But if you think about growing
city, growing, right?
No, right. They're not having as many kids as our generation did, you know?
Yeah.
We had our kids and went from there. You know?
I mean, we went for so many years thinking that overpopulation of schools, classes were too big. I remember that was the topic. Yeah. Yeah, that's what was our concern. Yeah. Our classrooms are just busting out at the seam, and you know, and now we're kind of suddenly it looks like we just turned it upside down. I'm just trying to get my
bearing in place. I think the point that you pointed out earlier about the charter school. Charter schools are not playing on the same playing field.
No.
You know, they get to pull in from everywhere.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you do that, and of course, some areas are going to show a decrease because now their families want to take their child to this particular charter school. And how many charter schools have been popping up in the city over the past 5-10 years? So
I was wondering that as well. It's not a question that we ask in this. Mm-hmm. Is you know, kind of like what we did with the parks when we said, okay, here are true parks, but really there are other spaces mm-hmm. that are being, and the library, like we didn't count first the Benita Library, but
right.
it is one.
Right.
So you know, kind of differentiating and pulling out here and seeing, are we getting growth in charter schools? How have charter schools impacted these schools? Private schools, are those growing as well? And we don't have any of that information.
We could probably see that in a nice table that shows what year charter school is open, and then show what percentage capacity at that year, and then you can just track it.
Yeah.
It decreased.
And that might be a good question for the next year report, is to add that to our questionnaire to help track more charter school and private school. Because it would make sense that, you know, maybe those students that aren't going to public anymore.
Well, I can tell you about one charter school, not charter school, private school, Mater Dei.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you that because, you know, I have a daughter who's about to go to high school, so we've been looking at every option.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
And when I met with the admission at Mater Dei, this is what they told me. We've grown by 45%.
They have.
Wow.
In the last
year.
8 years. I'm thinking,
wow.
And it costs $18,000 a year for you to put your child in there. And I'm thinking, where are those students coming from? How are they, you know? So again, I'm just trying to wrap my head around this. I think there's a number of things. You know, charter schools and private schools are not governed and bounded by the same restrictions that our public school system has.
Mm-hmm.
They have access to resources, private donations and things, and you know, if you look at the quality of their infrastructure, it's different. So
as the economy goes up and people can afford to put their kids in private schools, then they might do that over public schools.
Well, whether they can afford it or whether it's out of necessity or whatever the reason may be.
Yeah,
I mean, different parents, you know, you make a choice for your own child, but I'm just having a hard time kind of understanding all this data and analyze it. And on one hand, I'm glad that we have capacity to grow. Hallelujah, because we were saying we're overbuilding. We're not going to be able to house our kids in schools, and so that's not the problem. But then the concern is, what if they drop below a certain threshold?
Right,
you can't operate a school half empty.
Another question for next year: what is that threshold?
Yeah,
what is that percentage where it brings up the question of, you know, should we close the school?
And this whole state audit might answer that for us.
See the state funding, Has that ever happened? Does anyone know? Have we ever closed a school in Chula Vista?
Well, they can close it.
Depends what you consider. What's the number?
They can.
What do you consider
close?
It's a decision. Well, then if there's multiple ones that are getting close, then they might consolidate.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because we have a lot of them in the 60s, you know, a lot in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, you know, are those, you know, what's that threshold?
I would imagine the commute issue would be something of a concern. You start closing up schools or consolidating, all of a sudden parents have to figure out how their child is going to get there. And the environment, you know, today it's just not safe to let a child go on their own. It affects a parent's work schedule then.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a big decision. So I'm sure that, you know, a lot of thought and not a lot of enthusiasm would go into closing up or consolidating the schools, because it just affects a person's entire life.
Right.
Those with children, at least.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So for this year's report, I think we're good.
Yeah.
They're in compliance. They looks like they're doing good.
Yeah.
But I think we have questions for next year to add to the questionnaire.
Okay.
Well, what about analyzing some data on the charter schools? Didn't we say we were going to do that, or just keep track on that?
Add it
to the questionnaire. Okay.
Would it be worth when the data came that we were that the students were declining? My first thought is this unique to Chula Vista, or is it going on all over San Diego? Because if it's just Chula Vista, then Chula Vista has a problem. But if it's going on everywhere, then this is a lifestyle change.
So think about
point.
That question.
That's a good
point. Questionnaire.
Yeah.
That's a great question.
And I think it's everywhere, because I've heard different things.
Yeah, it seems like it might be.
You know,
it's a trend.
It's a trend
it's
going on.
It's a trend,
on.
Really. Kind of.
The millennials want to have everything perfect before they have kids.
Or just
that, or they're
kids.
Moving out of the state because it's so expensive.
That's true.
Well,
you know, California's crazy expensive. No.
Okay, so let's go to staff comments.
Okay, yeah, I think you guys are all aware of the drone forum, which is just a couple doors down. I think you're trying to get there. And also, just I don't know if you've been aware of it, but there's some new developments about the city of Chula Vista launching the Smart City Digital Headquarters. And there's some interesting materials on the Chula Vista website, so if there anybody is, wants to find out further, I can forward information to you. Okay.
Yeah, if you can. Yeah. Forward to the whole.
Yeah.
Okay, you got it. Oh,
yeah.
Thank you.
And that's it for me.
Patricia? Nothing? Okay. Commissioner comments? One thing I'd like to thank city staff on the tour.
Yeah.
I found it was very interesting. I know you guys put a lot of work to it. Me and Brian were commenting about the how it looked. Some of those properties were a little different. And to me, you know, those ones that were slanted, I didn't get it, but it's what they think's good. So, but I'd like to thank you guys. That was very well put. Think everybody
enjoyed
it.
Me too. I'm thanks. You know, it takes up a lot of resources and a lot of time. And the thing that I like about it is, like, we can all see it together. Like, I got a chance to chat with Max and Dwayne, you know, make comments to each other, and, you know, we could point things out to each other that we're not seeing. I thought that was, you know, that's the best part of the day, I thought, you know,
that's
being
cool.
able to see it as a group.
Yeah,
the city does look a little different when you're riding inside a bus than when you're in your own car.
Seriously, I
go on those routes all day long, and there were things that I observed that
right.
I took.
Well, you're paying attention to the road.
Slowly.
That's good.
Yeah, really. So we said we're.
Any other commissioner comments?
You know, this is kind of just more of a general conversation. I don't know how that ties in with us, but I was invited to participate in a. Currently, it's called an advisory group. A group of folks, which included our elected officials, were there. Police department captains and faith community. So it was a kind of a broad, you know, the business community. I was kind of invited to sit in as a business guy, looking at the Broadway corridor.
Mm-hmm.
And so one thing that I did mention, which quite frankly I was surprised, I did not see anybody from development services or. Kind of, and this was it's put together by the Public Strategies. Forgive me, I don't remember the name.
Institute for Public Strategy.
Yes.
Was it related more to?
More related to problem businesses along Broadway, but it really became more than that. It really became more of a planning issue and really. Revitalizing Broadway and kind of looking at some capacity issues and kind of what's going on. So, of course, you know, I'm sitting there, you know, the planning commissioner and GMOC, I have all this stuff going inside my head, and then I'm looking around the room. There were a lot of concerned citizens, bless their heart, but then I'm thinking, well, really, where are city staff, folks that do this day in, day out? They got the data, they got the analytics. So I made that point. So hopefully they'll reach out someone to development services. But then there were
they were talking about kind of all the redevelopment along Broadway, which again, all that kind of fit into the growth management oversight. Just FYI, as you know, as commissioners, we go out there. Our job is to kind of bring information back. I think it's kind of a long ways down the road before anything happens. But I'm glad to see that at least there is an organized effort to really look at Broadway and say, look, all the development that's going on at the Bayfront, we don't want to make sure that that's just an island. That really some of that growth and opportunities kind of spill over, certainly onto Broadway and then beyond. So, so it's good to see that folks are kind of taking the blinders off and looking at it a little more broadly. But then the troubling part was they were talking about, gosh, there is prostitution going on there. There is traffic.
In Chula Vista?
Right along Broadway. A couple of hotels, really? Of course, they were not going to name, you know. Yeah. So I took a deep breath and I thought, wow. You know,
The other morning I saw
there's some
on National City Boulevard. We got off the freeway.
There's stuff going on there along Broadway.
Looking girls
and,
there.
Really?
I was amazed. I hadn't seen that in years.
So as we think about growth management,
yeah,
you know, there's kind of these other pockets, areas that hopefully will not be left out of the planning. And certainly
forgotten.
Broadway is a critical, I mean, if you really look at the stretch of it.
It's too bad
redevelopment on the way. Yeah. Anyway, just as an FYI item,
good.
Just so.
Anybody else? No. Okay. I think we're good until 21st of February.
Very good.
Okay. Thank you, everybody.
All right.